They came from out of nowhere. From wretched thatched roof hovel towns. From mini-cities as advanced and technologically proficient as Century City itself. They came by hybrid and mule, by ancient rusted cars and bicycles. A few even in stolen Soviet choppers. They carried high-caliber machine guns or just bows and arrows. But they came, ready to give whatever they and their free cities had to offer, to answer the call of the President of the Reunited States. Ted Roczen, standing off to one side of the main square of the subterranean city, couldn't help but smile as he watched the groups of America's finest move among the crowd like little schools of differently colored fish. Each town and city had its own version of the proper combat gear, and the men strutted among one another like peacocks, showing their stuff. The Texas fighters, with their wide 10-gallon hats and six guns strapped to each leg, hooted and hollered across the floor, spinning lariats around one another, showing their expertise in the American sport of lassoing. The Kansas City Brigade wore suits and narrow leather ties, useful for garroting, and looked like businessmen of the last century, ready for a board meeting. Only their Uzis betrayed the fact they were fighters, not 20th century account executives. There were men in full U.S. Marine regalia, in Navy gear, in moth-eaten, olive-drab Army uniforms. Council President Randolph walked up to the podium, his severe countenance cutting through the jovial atmosphere.
May I introduce the President of the Reunited States?
All eyes turned toward the haggard-looking man who walked slowly to a hastily erected stage in the center of the wide Lincoln Square. Seats had been brought in from every part of the city and arranged in long curving lines around the central platform. They had expected several hundred, but nearly 1,000 men had shown up. From some cities, the entire top echelon had arrived, all wanting to make the historic trip. Now they filled the entire square, stretching off for 20 rows, and the citizens of Century City, fascinated by the proceedings as well, stood far back against the concrete walls or sat atop the one- and two-story factories that surrounded the central thoroughfare. President Lankford's smile lit up the room. Roczen could see that the love and respect of his people really did seem to put some electricity back into the man's face. Kim sat up on the dais behind her father, so Rock at least didn't have to worry about being caught between two beautiful women attempting to throw haymakers at one another. Rona sat by his side, her arms through his, with a snide smile on her perfect face. President Lankford gave a rousing speech about heroism in the face of impossible odds and how proud he was of each and every one of them. The words were poetic and stirring, but the voice cracked from time to time, and he seemed to lose his place once or twice. Yet it hardly mattered to those who listened, for he was their president, a living symbol that all was possible, that freedom was not just another pipe dream. So they gazed up at the old man, as if he was the most beautiful thing they'd ever seen. All their days of fighting, of suffering, suddenly seemed worth every second of pain. When Lankford was finished, he walked slowly back to his chair and sat down with a thin smile beside his daughter, who was the only one who realized how weak he was, who saw how fast the man was failing.
And now, I will give the floor to the man who probably has his finger on more of what is actually going on right now around the country than anyone, our intelligence chief, Frank Rath.
Thank you. Thank you. Please, curtail your applause. Let's dispense with all the usual how happy I am to see you here's and all that. We're here for one reason and one reason only: to forge a military response against the KGB forces that have taken over 65% of all Red Army fortresses in America. Kilov has finally made his move, and thus far his gamble has paid off. Zhabnov has fled back to Moscow, and not only has Kilov taken control of many fortresses, but he was able to take D.C. with all its central Red Army control centers and top military staff. Ted Roczen, who, I might add, is seated right now in the front row, was able to not only free the president, but kick Kilov's butt right the hell out of there. So, as a byproduct of the rescue, the regular Red Army in D.C. has been able to take back the city. I know. It's strange to see that as a good thing. I know it's a weird situation. We've been shooting at them for 100 years, and now we have to try to free them from the KGB, and now we're rooting for them. But you almost realize the threat Kilov poses, the things he has planned for the people of this nation. And it's even worse than many of you know. Our agents report that one of Kilov's priorities is gaining access to the land-based nuclear missiles that are scattered around the country. Thus far, due to elaborate security measures instituted by Premier Vasily, Kilov has been unable to get to them, find their locations, break into them, get the code books that are needed for launch. But it's only a matter of time, and not much time at that.
Why don't we just take all them goddamn KGB butchers and the Red Armies all at once?
Order! We can try and take them all, but I'm sure we'd lose. As I say, it's a peculiar situation. Kilov's forces are outnumbered by up to 50-1 in some cases. But you see, the very thing that the Skull is master of is intimidation. He rules by fear and confusion. Most of the regular Red Troops probably don't even really understand what's going on. The KGB, by decree going back to before the 1989 nuke war, has the freedom to go into any Russian military fortress in the world to search for traitors, saboteurs, blasphemers of the communist orthodoxy. In the last few years, Kilov apparently used this power more and more frequently, giving the Reds a chance to get used to it. To hate it, yes, but to accept it as an ongoing occurrence. This time, the KGB madman moved in a blitzkrieg, sending in commando teams by paratroop at all the larger fortresses. Before they could even respond, the officers, the munitions, everything that controls the power within a fortress were in KGB hands. The ordinary Red soldiers are being re-educated and commanded now by a combination of KGB officer staff and those Red Army commanders who have come over to what they see as the winning side.
Killable!
You just don't understand. Yes, we might take on the actual KGB units in a fort, but realistically, with the number of men we'll be able to raise and have combat ready in the field within 2 weeks, we wouldn't stand a chance against those caged-up army units. Just their sheer numbers would overwhelm us, like carpenter ants over a grasshopper. We have no choice, gentlemen, whether our stomachs like it or not, but to get those fortresses back out of the hands of the KGB. Otherwise, it won't matter what you think. Not when Kilov gets control of enough nukes to start blasting all over the damn place. This country will be deader than a doornail within months if that happens. You all know that. You all know what would happen to the little bit of life that has been able to force its way back if 100 A-bombs were scattered around, spitting out yet more poison. Let's use whatever strength we have to prevent Kilov from winning the Red Civil War. We nudge the fight in one direction, and then we can move in after when they're weak.
Well, I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
Please, please.
Already, some of the less sophisticated free fighters were standing on their chairs, their fists clenched, ready to take on any man in the joint. Suddenly, a figure rose from the seats and jumped on the stage. He walked past Rath and to the front of the platform. Without a word, he stared down at them, a palpable fire of fury burning in his mismatched violet and aquamarine eyes.
That's better. Much better. Now please be seated. Not only is the president of your nation watching this debacle, but you are also guests of Century City and therefore of mine. I'm sure that however you do business worked fine where you were, but to act like that here is unacceptable. You all get your chance to be heard, I promise you. But you'll do it our way, or you're no longer welcome here. And if anybody has a problem with that, you'll take it up with me. You got that? Good. Now, if you thought that Rath's idea was bizarre and unappetizing for your gourmet palates, try this on for size. I suggest not only do we carry out the plan for liberation of the Red Army from KGB forces, but that we contact Premier Vasily in Moscow and have him ally with us to fight Kilov, the common threat. Because, to be perfectly honest with you all, I don't think we can carry this thing out without additional heavy-duty help. And from the lack of discipline demonstrated by many of you, I feel more convinced that my preconceptions were right.
Wait, Rock. Seriously? But How? Rock, how could we possibly pull something like that off? And even if we could, how do we have any guarantee that the Reds wouldn't immediately turn on us as soon as the KGB had been vanquished? There's just too many variables.
I met Vasily. He's a tyrant, but he's neither a madman nor a fool. Whatever he does want, he doesn't want the world destroyed. I know that. I think we can strike a deal.
So what are you suggesting?
I propose that I contact Premier Vasily and offer to assist his Red Army in driving KGB forces out of the country. And in exchange for that aid, we get the withdrawal of all nuclear weapons in America.
Roxon, do you understand what you're asking us to do? If we work with Vasily's forces, they have all our faces, our characteristics. God knows what they'll overhear. We're risking the names, the locations of cities, the capture and interrogation of our top military minds. And what's to stop them from reneging on the agreement? They could just ignore the contract and round us all up. I can't get behind that suggestion, Roxon. There's just too many risks.
And if we don't work with them, we're risking the annihilation of the planet. Kilov has already taken over the largest forts, and I'm sure his men are working nonstop to build up their defenses. They're preparing for battalions from Russia, and they might be preparing for us to attack. But Kilov can't even fathom the forces teaming up against him. He took over the forts through surprise, and they can be taken back the same way.
Roxon, you've always had good luck. There have been times, situations, where you really should have died. Don't get me wrong, I'm eternally grateful for all the things you've done. And many of us would be in much worse positions if it weren't for your deeds. But all those times, you've been doing them yourself. Your party went to find the technicians to break down Zhavnov's mind-breaking facilities. You risked your own life to distract the spy drones from Langford after the Reconstitutional Convention. And Archer volunteered. And you volunteered to rescue Langford and his daughter when they were captured by Zhavnov's men. But this time, you're putting my men, America's men, at risk. If Vasily double-crosses you, that's how the cards fall. But you're talking about risking the lives and the futures of towns and cities across the country on something that doesn't need to happen. And that goes against everything I work for.
And there are times when we have to look past our little pockets of employment to see the greater good, to see what's worth risking everything.
I do think these ideas are ripe for debate. I open the floor. Now, I will moderate. Please wait for your turn to speak and try to limit the conversation to only what's being discussed.
An avalanche of questions and oppositions flew forth. The often raucous meeting lasted for hours, with every possible point of view being expressed. But as the debate yelled its way on, slowly it dawned on even the dimmest of the fighters that in reality, they didn't have a hell of a lot of options. As the city's largest clock mounted halfway up the wall of the northern side of the square hit 6 a.m., Council President Randolph decided it was time for a vote.
All right, now we have been over and over all the major proposals for hours now. I think it's time to decide, or I'm afraid it will be decided for us. Now basically, as I see it, it comes down to three plans. Number one, we don't do a thing. Let them fight it out. Continue to monitor the situation. Number two, we attack the KGB, not the Red Army, but no attempt to ally ourselves with Vasily. And number three, Rock's plan, we arrange a temporary alliance with Premier Vasily and fight alongside his soldiers to defeat Kilov, our common enemy. Who votes for plan one? I see. Plan two. Well, now that's a good amount. And plan three? Well, I think that's clear. Plan three it is. Ted Roxon will be in charge of the meeting and deployment of our troops. May you all sleep soundly this morning, and God bless America.
On the veranda of his office within the Kremlin, Vasily, the shriveled premier of the Soviet Empire, sat in his wheelchair, his eyes closed. The premier looked ill again. Very ill. But then Rahala, a Kenyan, and his closest advisor, could hardly remember the last time the man had been well. He had partially recovered from his heart attack, thanks to trusted doctors' drugs and Rahala's own homegrown remedies. He hovered between being able to work and meet with officials for 3 or 4 hours when he was at his best, and slipping into a coma for hours at a time at his worst. Somehow, the affairs of a world empire dragged on, run at the very top by a frail old man, his face dotted with age spots, his hands trembling, barely able to sign the documents that kept it all going. And when he was unable to even do that, Rahala had gotten very good at forging his signature.
Read it to me again, Rahala.
But, Excellency, I've read it 5 times now.
Yes. I'm afraid my mind is not catching every single word. Read it once more, and that will be the last time.
Very well then, sir. And I beheld, when he had opened the 6th seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every slave and free man hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains. And they said to the mountains and rocks, Fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand?
Vasily's eyes were shut tight. Rahala stood up and walked to the edge of the stone-walled Kremlin terrace and looked down over the bundled commissars heading home in the slowly falling Moscow snow.
Do you know who the he is in those passages, Rahala?
Ah, you're awake. Why, I would think it's God, Excellency.
God? No, it's not God, my faithful servant. It's Kilov. I know it is. And those words you read to me are predicting the destruction of the Earth. My fool nephew, President Zhabnov, was unable to keep control of the U.S. Capitol, even outnumbering the Dark One 100 to 1.
Here, Grandfather, cough into this. Grandfather, you mustn't strain yourself. You mustn't grow angry or...
Oh, why does it not stop, Rahala? Why is there no rest for me, but always war, blood, and more blood? I am growing tired of it all, my only friend. I don't know how long I can keep things going, keep this decrepit old body from crumbling into dust.
Grandfather, don't even talk like that. Half of life is wanting to live. Desiring to stay alive, to see the next day, another sun, another flower. You must want to live, or surely you will die. And both of us know what your death will mean. For me, for Mother Russia, for the world.
I do know. You think I don't? That is why I continue to live when my flesh calls me to the grave. I feel the weight of the responsibility like a ton of bricks on my back. And it only adds to the weight, Rahala. Only makes this frail flesh carry a heavier load than it can stand. Until my back feels as if it were literally cracking. And my legs as if they were made of gruel and water, not muscle and bone. I would have welcomed death long ago, were it not for the bastard's skull. Wheel me to the wall.
Rahala complied instantly, pushing the ornate wheelchair across the heated terrace and over to the low wall. From here, Vasily stared out over the spires of Moscow, the 1,000 little funnels of smoke sweeping up out of the chimneys as women cooked the evening meal for their husbands and children. Between the momentary breaking clouds, the bright sun shot golden arrows, cascading off the ancient Tsarist buildings that seemed to withstand the hands of time. The hands of different economic systems, different dictators. Even the prevalent radiation didn't seem to bother them. At first, when he had grabbed the reins of power many decades before, The job had seemed thrilling, the fulfillment of his destiny. He had taken to running the world as a fish takes to water. His iron will, coupled with his inherent charm and sense of style and diplomacy, made him perhaps the most effective and benign ruler of all the Soviets since the nuke war. Not that his subjects, spread around the world in their muddy little towns and villages, realized it. But he knew that in relation to what had been, and what could be, he was probably the best. And yet, now it all seemed in vain. All his efforts to loosen things up, if just a little, to stop nuclear weapons from ever being used again, it had all been just a holding action, while Kilov bided his time.
Damn! I should have killed him when I had the chance. Many years ago, when the madman was trying to seize the reins of the power in the KGB, when the previous commander died, or more probably was assassinated, I sided with Kilov in the battle, thinking at the time that he was the easiest to control, just because he was the youngest. But I was wrong. By Lenin was I wrong.
But there is still time. Stop him now, in his tracks. Send in troops from the motherland to attack before Kilov gains complete control of his situation.
I wish I could, but the military situation is very bad throughout the Asias. North China, Japan, the... Oh, but why go on? There is no way I can spare Red Army troops. The Empire is in turmoil. Every day there are more rebellions, more attacks on convoys, bases... It seems as if every woman, child, and even little infant, hardly able to walk, has a gun in his hand. They hate us so. Why do they hate us so? Hate me so, faithful one.
They hate you because they have no land of their own, no power of their own, no...
But I give them food, shelter, more food than all my predecessors put together. I have tried to stop unnecessary brutality, torture.
It is not enough, Great One. Men need more than just a roof and a loaf of bread. They need freedom.
I cannot. You don't understand. No one understands. I have been put in charge of a great factory and must keep it moving. Keep its gears meshing together. Keep its products, its food, churning out. Keep the barbarians at bay so that they don't batter down the walls. If I were to give up the controls of the factory, it would stop. The machines would crumble. There would be only anarchy everywhere, with the entire planet still grievously wounded. We would revert to the days of caveman, snarling and grabbing for the few bits of raw meat. Man was not meant to be free. He has never been able to use freedom properly. No, Rahala. Man was meant to be ruled. He needs to be ruled. With one empire, there would be no war. And this is why I cannot hand back. Scatter the reins of power. It would be like handing the reins to a wild horse. It would just wander freely, eating grass, sleeping in the snow, until it froze to death. Man needs to be enslaved, faithful servant. It is but a question of who the master shall be.
Then be prepared, Excellency. Be prepared for more and more upheavals, for this is just the beginning. For once man tastes even the smallest bite of freedom, like the wolf and its first lick of blood, they long for more, must have more above all else. It is within your destiny to strengthen that freedom, to make the world strong enough to fight Kilov and future Kilovs, of whom there will always be more. Then you can die, Grandfather, in peace, knowing you have done the right thing and that the torch of life burns brighter. You can die smiling, Grandfather. It is still within your power.
Oh, my head! My head! It hurts. Please, no more words, not tonight. I am very tired.
Oh, Grandfather.
Rahala wheeled the Premier back through the wide glass doors to his bedroom and lifted him like a rag doll from the chair. depositing him as tenderly as a father would a child in the center of the soft down feather bed.
Oh, yes. Sleep. Thank you, faithful one. Go now. Eat. Leave me. Let me sleep, Rahala. And do not wake me unless the earth is about to be destroyed.
Yes, grandfather. Gods?
Yes, sir.
No one, absolutely no one but me is to disturb him.
Yes, sir.
Grandfather, time is running short. This war for freedom has already begun.
Oh, I just love your nails. You must tell me who does them for you.
No one does them. They're beautiful naturally, just like every other part of me. But I hear you're having a lot of trouble with your own natural attributes. You know, things starting to sag and wrinkle. I know a plastic surgeon in a cave outside of Topeka who can do wonders with, well, anyone, even you.
How kind. I see he's done wonders for you. No beauty, of course, but then look what he had to work with. But cute, yes, quite cute. From a sow's ear into
a... Jesus, would you two shut the hell up for just 1 minute? I can't hear my stomach rumbling with all that gabbering behind me.
She started it.
No, I think you started it.
Ah, for Pete's sake. Rock, did we have to let them both come?
I know. There are just fights a man can't win. I didn't have a choice.
Well, I pray I find myself in your situation, Rock. I just hope it's not during the largest battle in modern American history.
After the gathered military delegates back in Century City had voted to follow Roxanne's plan, the fortresses to be attacked were assigned to different cities, pretty much according to their manpower, their armaments, and their ability to take on a particular-sized Russian fort. Century City's top battle strategists gave suggestions to those who were willing to listen on the best mode of attack, and the time was set. 14 days. They would return to their towns and cities and assemble every bit of man and woman power they could. At the same hour in 14 days, the free forces would strike across America in a coordinated attack. And like D-Day, almost 150 years ago, everything was riding on it. Roxanne led a smaller elite unit of Century City's forces, his own team of Chen, Detroit, Archer, and McCaughlin, along with 10 other hand-picked men. And of course, Kim and Rona, who were giving the rest of the team their fair share of laughs. First, they would go to a nearby radio outpost and break in so they could get in touch with Vasily. Regardless of how the Premier received Rock's plans, they would then link up with a 5,000-man force from Century City at Fort Minsk. It was the largest of the Midwest fortresses, the central headquarters of military operations for the entire KGB takeover. And if their intel reports were correct, the place that Kilov had fled to after miraculously surviving the Octagon's explosion in Washington. Roxanne knew the takeover of Minsk was essential to the success of the war. If they could take out the brain, the body would fall.
Tell me, how did you get that red hair? Mecco root?
Darling, it's all my own, as is everything you see. It's a pity there's so little to see on you.
Men just love little packages, dear. It makes them feel so manly. With you, I would think it would be more along the lines of a wrestling match or a weightlifting competition, and I'm sure you would do very well.
Paces ahead, Roxanne didn't know whether to laugh or cry. He loved them both, each in a different way, each bringing up a whole different range of emotions. He had been Rona's lover for years. Though she knew that he slept with others along the road from time to time, she had never made an issue of it. A man is a man is a man. As long as no little hussy from Century City made a stab at her man. And none dared. Not against the 5'10", 150 pounds of pure muscle and fighting ability of Rona Wallender. Descended from a famous circus trapeze family, Rona had been trained as a child in gymnastics and acrobatics, working as a performer in her father's traveling show, secretly an intelligence-gathering operation for the free fighters. When her father was captured and executed, Rona had managed to escape and made her way to Century City. The rest was history. She and Roxanne had hooked up. And, until Kim showed up, she had been his woman. The two women were as different from one another as the sun and the moon. Green-eyed Rona, tall, strong, strikingly deep-tanned, long-legged, with a face of chiseled beauty, and a mane of flaming red hair that cascaded down her back like a waterfall. She was a star-patterned mutant, too, like Roxanne. Strong, tough as nails, resistant to radiation and a host of diseases. And in bed, she had taken Roxanne to heights of passion even he hadn't dreamed existed. Kim was everything Rona was not. Petite at 5'2", blonde, alabaster complexion, a little on the shy side. She was the all-American girl, and had she lived 100 years before, would surely have been a model, with a near-perfect look of a certain type of girl who existed only here in the USA. It wasn't really that she was striking in any way, and if her features were looked at one at a time, ivory skin with a few freckles, blue-green eyes, almost pug nose, she wouldn't have seemed all that special. But somehow, when they were all put together as a face, there was a remarkable, open, soft beauty that Roxanne had found irresistible. The Doomsday Warrior decided to just sit back in the saddle and enjoy it. At least he wouldn't have to choose between the two, not while they were both hammering away at each other like two heavyweight boxers. They rode for hours into the evening and then the night, which grew dark as heavy storm clouds migrated east to deposit their straining loads. Rock decided to camp about midnight, sensing that Snorter, his brid, was beginning to falter. And if that giant among mutant horses was feeling tired, the others were surely ready to drop.
Rest up 6 hours.
The team headed the brids about 50 yards over to a grove of jungle-leaved willow trees, their nuke-mutated hanging branches forming a protective canopy from the elements and from prying red spy drones in the morning sky. Rock realized that since the KGB had attempted its coup, he had seen not one of the cigar-shaped unmanned camera rockets flying by. Out of the worst occurrences came useful results. The brids were given their nylon bags filled with high-protein oats and then allowed to graze on tender morsels nearby while the men set up their sleeping bags and undid their tents, just in case the pack of thunderheads riding miles above their heads should decide to spill out their guts of rainwater. During dinner, Kim and Rona kept quiet, realizing that everyone had probably had about enough for the day. But as Roxanne finished his meal and went to turn in after posting guards, both women followed him, setting up their own sleeping sacks on each side of him just yards away. All three of them lay there, unable to really fall asleep, as they felt the emotions run between them like electric current through a wire. They lay on their backs, eyes open, looking straight up at the sky, each with his or her own seething thoughts and desires. Suddenly, the night lit up above as several meteors flew by, burning up in gigantic bonfires in the sky. Since the war, the weaker atmosphere had allowed debris from space to burn more slowly, sometimes hitting the ground in somewhat larger chunks than it had in the past. And the larger masses burned spectacularly at lower altitudes as they tore through the air. The sky was suddenly filled with balls of fire, screaming down from their trillion-mile journeys through space. The meteorites were so large that the free fighters could see the shapes of them as they came burning down like hawks with their wings on fire, swooping in at stark angles. A globe of white whooshed past, filling the night sky with near daylight. The horizon glowed white for a moment. Rona and Kim's hearts were beating like pistons, but neither made a sound or reached out to be held by the man they loved. They were like two wolves circling prey, each waiting for the other to make a move. Roxanne, seeing no alternative, glumly slept alone. The next day, Roxanne woke them all early, and after freeing the brids from their daily collection of burrs, brambles, and twigs, the force loaded up and was off again. Kim and Rona got on the case again within minutes of striking the trail.
Oh, look, your eyes are all puffy. You look like you could have used a few more hours of beauty sleep.
At least I have something to beautify, dear one.
Oh, something's not the word, darling. I would say stockpile is more accurate.
Well, if a man came to you looking for supplies, I dare say he'd finally empty shelves.
And so it went. The attack force rode for hours, the clouds dissipating as the sun rose higher. They came to a rise in the increasingly sparsely vegetated terrain.
Hold up.
What's ahead, Rock?
I'm checking, let me see. Something just doesn't feel right. There's a snake about 100 yards away. Oh, wait. There's another, and there's a whole bunch. Holy shit!
What's wrong?
Check your own binoculars. Straight ahead, about 200 yards ahead.
Yak! They're everywhere, Rock. It looks like hundreds of them spread out all across the near part of the plain.
Scared of a few snakes, dear?
Yeah, it is silly, isn't it? I mean, with such a large target as you, why would they ever go after me?
All right, you two go first. I can't stand the two of you prattling on like two.
We're gonna have to go through them. All of us.
Seriously?
Yeah. This must be some sort of breeding grounds. Extends for miles. We can't play around trying to detour.
But, Rock, surely some of them are poisonous. How will we get through? I mean, the brids, there's just so many.
We can use the Illumitarps. Schechter's scientists designed them so they can be split into strips and used for other purposes. They're as strong as steel, flexible, just perfect for hybrid armor.
It took them almost half an hour to get the wide protective tarps, based on the space blanket of the 20th century, wrapped around the legs of their brids from the hoof to the top of the thigh and secured with tape. The animals didn't seem to like the idea too much, but they had been well trained back in Century City and allowed themselves to be girded. When the free fighters finished and stood back to see what they had wrought, they had to squelch the laughs, for the creatures looked like overstuffed, badly made carousel horses walking around stiffly from the somewhat confining pieces of Illumitarp.
All right, men, mount up and pull your legs over your bridge shoulders. Just go easy, guys. No use scaring these snakes. Just keep your cool and you'll be fine.
Rock?
Just keep yourself out of harm's way. These things may bite, but they can't jump. There's nothing for them to bite into.
As if with one mind, one living body with 100,000 tentacles, the plains all around them came to life in a slithering of slimy bodies. There were snakes of every size and color, thick black ones like eels with their dark mouths open and hissing, green and red ones moving like slashes of electric color across the light brown dirt, from little worms the size of pencils with fangs nearly as large as their bodies, to pythons 20 feet long. And they were all coming towards the free fighters.
Whoa! Rock!
Kim, hold on tight. Wrap your legs around its neck. Grip the saddle horn with both arms. They can't hurt you.
The snakes closed in from all sides like the twin walls of the Red Sea, crashing together against the terrified riders and their mounts. They leapt and struck out with jaws agape as if they were ready to swallow the world. Thousands of pairs of fangs closed on the Illumitarps around the hybrid's legs, coating the material with sticky venom. Rock knew the brids couldn't keep this up. They were well on their way to panicking.
Hit the brids! Scream at them! Shoot your pistols off next to their heads! Make them more scared of you than the snakes! We gotta bolt through this!
The brids were quickly panicked into a galloping stampede. Thousands of snakes were trampled beneath the brid's pulverizing hooves. Yet still, the serpents on every side flew into the air.
Now the snakes! Shoot at everything you see! Keep them away!
The stampede continued. Only the sheer speed, power, and leg armor of the large mammals allowing them to slam their way through an ocean of neurotoxin.
Brookson! Matheson's been bit!
Rock turned to see one of the new men picked for the mission wrestling with a 4-foot-long python. The snake had its fangs sunk full length into the man's neck. The rookie managed to rip the thing out and heave it away, but instantly threw his hands around his throat. Then his entire body began spasming, the arms and legs jerking out of control. The body tumbled from the saddle and down to the sea of death.
Rook, we can't leave him!
We don't have a choice. We gotta keep running or we'll die like him. Made it! Everybody slow down. Give the brids a chance to relax. Everyone still here?
Aye. Everyone except Matheson. Poor bastard.
At least he didn't suffer. I saw him go down. He was dead before he hit the ground. That poison was like a cyanide injection to the brain.
Anyone else? Any Brids acting funny?
They all looked around at themselves and each other, and somehow nothing was the worse for wear. Matheson's hybrid, who had followed the orders, stood looking up at Roxen nervously, as if he had done something wrong.
McCoughlin, take that extra Brid and hook him up with your kitchen team. Might need him later. And everybody, whatever you do, don't touch the Illumitarps. They're covered with this stuff. You can see it like syrup coating the outer surface. We'll have to be careful until we reach a stream where we can wash the stuff off. So don't let your legs down or your hands rub against it, okay?
He didn't have to worry. After experiencing the ocean of demonic creatures, none of them was going to mess around with the excretions. As uncomfortable as their legs were in the muscle-straining position high on their mounts' backs, they tried to hold them even higher to avoid being anywhere near the moist, poisonous deposits.
We'll keep due east. This area seems familiar. I think there's a river a few miles ahead. Let's go!
The team followed behind slowly like a funeral procession. Even Kim and Rona were at a complete loss for words, their hearts still beating so rapidly that they felt as if they would crack their rib cages. Both were deeply shaken, but neither wanted to admit it. So they rode with heads hung down, as if mourning for the lost Matheson.
You see anything?
No. The radio outpost looks like they've tucked in for the night.
Well then, that's perfect for us. Chen, how's your wife?
Chun-Li and I are no longer together.
Sorry, I didn't mean...
No, it's fine. She didn't take kindly to these little ventures. After I told her about the Reconstitutional Convention, she put her foot down. Said I would do better just staying home and teaching.
What did you say to that?
I told her that if everybody taught, nobody would do. Also, I get bored easily.
Is Chun...
Chun-Li is not available.
Oh. That's not what I was about to ask.
Uh-huh.
You see anyone?
Nothing. The gate's closed.
Zip, want to take a look?
No, I trust you.
So, what's the plan?
Simple. We need to get in touch with Vasily. We're at a radio outpost. This is where Russian messages go when they need to get back to Moscow. That tower's strong enough to broadcast voice by geosynchronous orbit.
Satellite? I thought you destroyed their communication center.
Not for communications, center. Just for attacks. They still have a few operating. Anyway, if we can get a hold of the sophisticated transmission gear locked away in the concrete bunker...
And get one of the technicians to operate it.
Right. Then we might be able to get our message through. McCoughlin.
Yeah, Rock.
You're leading the charge with Detroit and me. Get your lockpicking tools. Detroit, ready?
Ready my grenades.
Yeah. McCoughlin, you done?
Just a few more. Yeah. Okay. Go, go, go!
All right, we're in. Rock, which way do...
They had barely gotten inside before a floodlight swooped down and caught the three lead free fighters, frozen for a split second in mid-stride.
Take them out!
A burst took out the spotlight, and the two gunners in machine gun emplacements frantically swung their big 50s, trying to sight blind. They didn't even notice the grenades landing. It's an ancient adage, but surprise is the most powerful ally a fighting force can have. The enemy is caught off guard, asleep, taking a piss out back. And in the vital seconds it takes just to comprehend what's going on, it's too late. The free fighters threw their ropes, climbed the walls, and swept through the compound with the ferocity and timing of a pack of tigers. Anything that moved, they shot. There would be time for prisoners later. Roxen's 15-man team was probably the best-trained, toughest unit in Century City. And thus, the entire country. The poor bastards didn't have a chance. Even Rona and Kim were taking their toll from the hill with long-range IR-scoped shots. Rock and Chen headed for the main concrete bunker set dead center of the base, dodging the line of machine gun fire that was tracing closer to them by the second.
Chen, take him out!
They're in a pillbox! I just waste a star!
Get down!
Detroit wasn't just a grenade thrower. He was the ace grenade thrower. Back in Century City, he was the eternal star of the military baseball team, which played the cities twice a year. The long muscular arms on his squat muscular body could generate such power and pinpoint accuracy that neither the opposing baseball team nor the commies stood a chance. Both of Detroit's grenades flew through the 7-inch wide opening, one hitting the machine gunner on the side of the head. He nearly blacked out, came to in about a second, and looked down to see the two globes lying motionless on the floor as if waiting to be picked up. He had just enough time to turn and reach for the door, his fingers barely touching the knob.
Go, go, go!
Rock halted and peered off in the direction of the screams. Half of Rock's force waved at him, smoke curling from their weapons. Roxon hit the stairs that led to a steel door about 10 feet below a pillbox.
Detroit, crack!
I'm gonna use a concussion, Rock! It's gonna make a pow!
Go for it.
Go!
Roxon was praying that the Russians had followed their typical course when building the communications outpost. As was the way of the Russian Empire, everything planned. Everything came down from the top, from bureaucrats who sat around in huge empty halls making plans and forms for the world. In Century City, the Doomsday Warrior had taken the opportunity to go through captured Russian books and letters, whenever they were taken, along with the other booty. And he knew they always built the comm units dead center of the sub-basement, reasoning that it was the most protected place in case of full-scale artillery attack. Though where the free fighters were going to get any nuclear weapons had apparently never crossed their minds. The three Rock Team free fighters, their faces red with exertion, sweatshirts drenched with sweat, tore through the basement, searching for the stairs to the lowest level.
Rock!
The advancing Russian gunner dropped his rifle and slammed both palms over his throat. Chen's throwing star had embedded itself a good 3 inches into the man's neck. The man fell to the concrete, spasming in his own red liquid, his eyes already fixed and staring.
Sorry for the push, Rock. Didn't think you wanted to make that fellow's acquaintance.
He's not my type.
The Doomsday Warrior started forward into near darkness, his 12-gauge shot pistol cocked near his head. He saw just a glint of light on the floor. Then it was gone. Rock dropped to his knees, lowered his head to the cold cement, and began squinting furiously. Chen and Detroit looked at each other as if their leader had gone mad.
Lose a contact lens or something?
I saw a glint. I think... here. This is it. A trap door down to the next level. It's sealed tight, but not tight enough. What do you think?
Yeah. I think I see what you're talking about. Feels thick, Rock. Maybe 2-3 feet thick.
You got something for that?
No better way to find out than by trying.
Detroit took the remaining 6 grenades from his web belt. The rest were back at his brid, and placed them around the perimeter of the sealed door. Instead of pulling pins, Detroit flicked a small lever on the mini-bombs that switched on their radio detonation controls.
And now?
Now we get the hell out this room.
All right, men. We've got just one more door to blow open. Mop up the area. The outpost is ours. We don't need to take anyone else out. But keep an eye out for stragglers. You set, Detroit?
Yep. 1, 2, 3.
All right, back down. Double time.
The trio ran back into the outpost. The hallway was charred, but the main rooms seemed to have made it through unscathed. Detroit was the first one up and around the corner, wanting to see with his own eyes whether it had worked. He shot forward, trying to peer through the still swirling smoke, and then saw it. The grenades had blasted the concealed hatch right out of the floor. He could see down into the large chamber below. Through the dust, he could see about 20 technicians cowering in the corner.
Don't kill him if you can help it. We need at least one tech expert alive. Otherwise, we've just wasted a lot of ammo.
And grenades.
The stunned, dust-covered Russian techs around the 100-foot square room looked about ready to pass out. They weren't fighters, just communication specialists and repairmen whose training was in turning dials, not pulling triggers. They didn't want to die, and from the looks of the filth-covered American rebels who were coming after them, it appeared that that was the general idea. Several of them tore over to the gun case and grabbed for pistols.
Don't shoot! No one down here has to die if you do what we tell you. I promise, as an officer of the Reunited States Army. Shit! Nobody else even moved. He wanted to be a hero and ended up dead. I'm telling you, I just need to make a simple...
Over here, bastard!
Rock turned to see a large, beer-bellied military officer, probably the overseer of the technical team, holding an arm around Chen's neck, a Turgenev revolver poised against his head. Rock and Detroit froze, their weapons useless.
Yes, that's right. Anyone moves, and your little buddy here gets his brain sent back down to Chen.
The man didn't know whether to grab for his newly broken gun hand or his beaten groin. Chen didn't give him time to do either, as he made spear fingers with both hands and rammed them into the man's ears. Chen wiped his sticky fingers clean on his pants and turned, ready for anyone else.
Okay, everybody listen closely. We're not here to kill you. We just need you all to do us a little favor and then we'll leave.
I know you. I've seen your picture. That white streak of hair down the center of your scalp. One blue, one violet eye. It's you. You're the Roxan, the head of the rebels. They say you love nothing more than to cut off heads and put them on a stake. We are dead men.
I appreciate the notoriety, but I'm not giving autographs today. And we're not taking any heads. All we want and need is a telecom link up to the Kremlin. I want to talk to your Premier Vasily.
Rock couldn't help but grin as he watched the faces of the technicians grow a whiter shade of pale.
But they will know it was us. They'll kill us. They'll put us on the dissidents' crucifixes outside Moscow if we do as you say.
Pal, trust me. When I get finished talking to the Great One, they'll give you all the Medal of Lenin. Now, listen to me. We just need you all to do this one little thing, and we'll leave. You all know what's going on. KGB has taken all your Red Army chums prisoner. Well, those that it didn't slaughter outright. What the hell do you think they're gonna do to you after they catch up with you?
The technicians who understood looked at one another nervously, for they had been wondering and talking about that very possibility when the doors above them had crashed down in pieces.
What do you want us to do?
Just put me in voice communications with Vasily, that's all. Anyway, fellows, I'm not asking, I'm telling you. We haven't got time.
Within minutes, the young tech sat in front of his radio transmission stations. The rest were locked in a storage closet for safekeeping. He was madly twisting dials this way and that, monitors and grid screens lighting up with an incomprehensible array of diagrams detailing the relay routes of the Telsat link-up. Rock, Chen, and Detroit watched the largest screen, mounted high on one wall, in fascination. It depicted the Earth, the Bounce satellite hovering above their location, and the Moscow radar tower. The radio man did his work quickly and efficiently, lining up the waves of all the different locales so they were in transmission mode symmetry. All hooked up and ready to go.
I guess we're ready. The Premier, you say? You want to talk to the Premier?
Yeah, I do. Vasily. In the Kremlin?
Ah, certainly. I'll just call up the Premier. Here, take the headset. I do not wish for him to know who is doing this.
Rock examined the headset for a few seconds to make sure it wasn't booby-trapped, and then slipped it over his head.
Did you do it right? I'm only hearing static.
Absolutely, Roxan. I entered the passcode and everything.
Who is this? I gave orders that no one, absolutely no one, was to call the grandfather tonight.
This is Ted Roxan. You might remember me. Listen, pal, I'm calling long distance, so gotta get to the point. I have an offer I want to make to the Premier. I know he'll want to talk to me.
Roxan! This is Rahala, the Premier's advisor. Do you remember me? I was present when you were our guest at the Kremlin.
Yes, I do. I believe you are a man of peace. I was impressed by your stature at the Kremlin. I believe you are the Premier's conscience, the voice that counsels sanity for the world. And I tell you now, let me talk with him. Whatever went on between us in the past is irrelevant. We have a common enemy. An enemy who will take us all down with him. You know what I'm talking about, and I know you do.
Yes, I do. I know. I have prayed that something would happen, that the Premier would act swiftly and powerfully. Perhaps, Ted Roxon, you are the God-sent messenger to save this dying world. Yes, I will get the Premier, but he is tired. So tired these days. Speak gently with him. Try to persuade him, not bludgeon him. I will tell you something. I am on your side, Roxon. I am not a communist. It is not my way. But I do counsel the grandfather. He is not a bad man. Just a man trapped by world events. He is, in his own way, trying to do what he believes is best. But he is afraid, Ted Roxon. He is afraid of what will happen after he is gone. I think if you are careful, you can get him to help. Be careful, Roxon. It could all ride on this conversation.
I hear you, pal. And if you're ever over this way, drop by Century City. Say Rock sent you.
Within a minute, Roxon was on the phone with the ruler of the world.
Roxon, you bastard! I was told you were dead! I hoped you were dead!
Ease up, Excellency. We both screwed each other with the treaty, okay? We both lied, double-dealed, and stabbed each other in the back. So on that score, we're even.
Oh, you are right, Roxon. We did both, as you colloquially say, screw each other. And now?
And now we're going to help each other, Excellency. We know who the threat to planet Earth is. And though you may think I'm a menace, and I certainly don't like you, it's not either of us. We've been banging away at each other for decades, and things are still standing. It's the Skull, the murderer, Kilov. We know he's taken over huge numbers of your Red Army forts, and Zhabnov has fled D.C. So you can't be too happy about recent developments.
Happy? No, but my arms are tied, at least for a few months. My forces are spread very thin around the world.
Don't be a fool. Whoever your troops are battling, China, Ethiopia, India, it doesn't matter. Kilov. Kilov is the only one who matters. Let's help each other. I need you.
The Empire crumbles, Roxon. You don't understand. It's nationalistic men like you, always attacking my troops, my convoys, blowing up my fortresses. And when they are gone, barbarism, anarchy. The entire human race will fall into the dark ages from which it will never again arise. I am the last buffer between civilization of any kind and total and complete savagery.
For the first time, Rock suddenly and instantly saw how the Premier viewed the world. To him, he was the last bastion of Western civilization, albeit the Slavic, not the Greco-Roman part. He did see himself holding the walls against the hordes, the mutants, the wolves who would devour it all. Trying to save what was left of the books, the computers, the remnants of the old world. In his own way, perhaps the man was heroic in his misguided attempts.
Excellency, we could get into a debate about this for hours, about how what appears to you to be barbarism is actually just the patriotism of men around the world wanting to run their own lives and nations. Debate about how, with true freedom, there can be no barbarism because each society will make its laws and culture from the bottom, from the heart, not from the top, from dogmatism. You must have had a stern father and wish to be the same to the world.
Roxon's perfect pegging of the Premier threw the old man for a loop. He hadn't realized that anyone could see him that clearly, and it made him feel suddenly terribly vulnerable. He sat in his sweat-soaked bed, holding the red phone near his mouth, but was only able to make the movements of his lips. No sounds.
All right, now you're angry. But within your anger, listen to me. We, the free fighters throughout America, are going to attack the Black Shirt forces. We're going to surround 50 of the biggest bases that Kilov has managed to gain control of, and we're going to risk our lives to save your men. We can't allow Kilov to get total control, to get access to the nuclear stockpile. He'll make the U.S. and the world twice as radioactive as it already is.
The very thought had been giving nightmares to Premier Vasily. The 100 land-based nukes that Red Army forces had hidden around the occupied country. Kilov would have a hard time tracking them down and getting the launch codes, but he would manage it. If nothing else, Kilov always accomplished what he set out to do.
What do you want, Roxton?
I want you to get me some tough men, Excellency. Not the conscripted guys marching in formation with rows of medals. Not Nazis. I know you've got native forces working for you in various parts of the world. Men who have been out there fighting the savages, as you call them. Fighting the Morbir in Asia. The Flame of Allah. The Utapas in Nicaragua. I want some of those men, Excellency. Men who can chew trees and knock down walls with their fists. Men who are ready to die.
Yes. Yes. I suppose I could let you have some irregulars from a few spots. Rahala!
Yes, Grandfather?
Where might we scrape up some forces? Some real forces, not parade troops.
India, sir. That's perhaps the one place on Earth right now where things are not at the point of exploding. The rebellion of the Hindu army was put down decisively at the Battle of New Delhi just last month. And there's but one reason we did well there, Excellency.
And that is?
The Sikhs, Excellency. A warrior tribe going back to pre-biblical times. They have always been fighters. It is passed on from father to son like a sacred heritage. They're some of the toughest fighters in the empire, Excellency. And with the lull over there, there would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 50,000 of them freed up for other duty.
You must send them. You have no choice. For you are a man of destiny. A man who will be remembered as the centuries themselves turn to dust for what you decide right now. You cannot be vilified as a man who allowed the world to fall back into the very dark ages you say you're trying to save us from. Every second strengthens the murderer's hands, for he stands unopposed in his drugged madness.
Yes. Yes! I'll give you those men, American. I will send you the Sikhs so that you can drive out the cursed Kilov from your land. I'll give you those men, though Lenin knows what the result will be, whether they'll even fight alongside of you or against you.
They'll fight with me, Excellency, because you'll tell them to. Because they are your pawns to do with what you wish.
That they are. Tell me, Roxon, what do you personally get out of all this?
The Premier motioned for Rahala to hand him a glass of medicinal spirits to calm him down.
In doing this, I get the skull out of the way, for good. And I want one thing in return for our help to you.
Your help to us? You just called me to help you!
Yes, but the result of our aid will release your nephew's entire imprisoned army over here. We will be back to the way things were. But at least you will have your forces.
Yes, yes, it's true. Thank you. What do you propose, American?
I want all the nuclear devices in America removed, never to return. If you want to fight us with your men, your cannons, your jets, then we will fight. But there can be no more nuclear explosions here. The ecological system is hanging by a thread.
It irritated Vasily to no end that many of the things Roxon was saying were thoughts he had had himself in the darkness of his nights. Yet having been the highest of the high for as long as he could remember, it was difficult making deals with a free fighter mutant who had killed or been responsible for killing literally hundreds of thousands of his men.
Roxon, you are too damned clever. I had been thinking of deactivating the missiles anyway, having come to some of the same conclusions as you. But if, and only if, your insane plan works, I'll do it forthwith.
Sir, I never begin anything I can't finish. In wine, women,
within a few more minutes, as the incredulous young radio operator listened in awe, Roxon finished arranging a tentative rendezvous point for Vasily's airlifted troops to meet their American counterparts.